Oh my God, Greg. Mm. That is a beer.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Holy
wow.
When was the last time we had a beer like this? Probably like first time we've had a sour from the brewery or...
I mean, I'm thinking back to Michigan show.
Beer to Mars?
Yeah. And that's what I compare this to. That's what this is.
This one's more complex than I remember the Beer to Mars. I mean, just the 20 different things that come through.
I think you're right. I really do. This is competing with the Beer to Mars right now.
It's shaking your foundations.
Well, I mean, your foundation should always be open to be shaken. And this is something that is truly, truly special.
Every sip is a pleasure. It's every sip you're like, oh, I have more of this. Mm-hmm. It's like a present. I don't want to sound like I'm being hyperbolic or anything. It is. I mean, this is my.
Well, you are being hyperbolic, but you because this beer opens itself up to hyperbole.
But is hyperbole if it's true?
It's an interesting question. What is the definition of hyperbole?
Hyperbole, I personally define hyperbole as generally exaggeration.
Yes, but I'm wondering if hyperbole has the meaning okay, so that's just one definition. I'd see there's other definitions. But the one that you asked, exaggerated statements and claims not meant to be taken literally. So by our conversation before, this is literally...
Oh no, hyperbole has fallen into decay because literally has fallen apart. Need a new definition for literally or for hyperbole.
Yeah, I guess. So why don't we take... If literally is going to go away, why don't we take hyperbole and make it into...
This is non-hyperbolous.
Yeah.
Non-hyperbolic.
Yeah.
I remember, like, you know, one of the things in high school, probably in high school, you've heard the word hyperbole. You read the word hyperbole. I didn't know they were the same thing for...
There's lots of words like that.
For a stunningly long time. I'm like, what's hyperbole?
There are definitely words that are like that I was pronouncing completely wrong. And I thought that was the way you pronounced it. And it was either me reading it wrong or me saying it wrong. I remember thinking deprecated was depreciated. That was just me not...
I had that problem, too. I mean, well into adulthood.
Yeah.
Right? And where do you use each one, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, kind of the same, vaguely.
Well, depreciated is an economic term. Deprecated is a term... But
both me... I mean, yes, they're different, but... Vaguely, they have the same thing, right? Depreciated means the thing no longer has book value.
Right.
Deprecated means no longer supported, which could be transmutated into no longer having value.
But deprecated means, I think, and I actually had this conversation with somebody at work a few days ago, because we were saying, yeah, I mean, deprecated means that they would prefer you don't use it, but it's still there, as opposed to it's no longer there. Because they prefer you don't use it because it's going away.
Right. Mostly, yes.
But sometimes apparently not.
I've seen deprecated as that has been deprecated, mm-hmm. which can also mean it's no longer there. Is being deprecated is... You should really write your code not to use this function. Has been deprecated means your function, your code's no longer going to work.
I mean... It mostly comes into play when you're dealing with older versions of languages, or I'm thinking mostly, I see it a lot in like HTML. All these tags for like Blink. Bold. Well, Blink is gone. Blink is still technically there, but it's not supported by most browsers. Marquee, right? but like B or I, you know, all those tags are deprecated. They're not supposed to be used. You're supposed to use styles. You're supposed to use.
Is strong both deprecated or is that still?
Yeah, I think strong is deprecated.
I mean, I haven't done official web work in forever, right? So I don't. Yeah, I mean, styles is the way to go, but B is such a nice shorthand. If you're doing something quick and dirty.
I think that's why it's never been thrown away, because everyone uses it. So it's like, we want it to go away. And if you were to run one of those style checkers, one of those WC3 style guides on your thing, it'll say, you can't use this, this is deprecated, but everyone still uses it because, yeah. Doing a B
versus style equals style, colon.
Yeah, italics. Or no, for bold it would be font weight. And
weight strong, right? Or
no, font weight, you can say font weight bold.
Okay.
I think you could also say font weight boldest right there. You can go in that direction.
So there was a middle period where bold was discouraged for strong and italics was discouraged for emphasis.
Right.
Right?
EM, yeah.
And no one really it's more letters. Why would I want to use that? And the argument was it's more portable, right? More future-proof. Because you can, different things can interpret strong in different ways. I don't know. I never really bought into the whole.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I'm using Cold Fusion now. And Cold Fusion is tag-based, but it's not really. I mean, it's everything is done in tags. But you can actually just write script and just put them in CF script tags but the tags themselves are just, they're just lines of code. They happen to be in tags. So,
right. I mean, last time I did Cold Fusion, we used a little bit of CF script, but it was this was 2001, right? It was last time I touched Cold Fusion, 2002, maybe. You know, you had a tag with a bunch of attributes, which defined your query. And then that was kind of a parent tag, and you had subtags, which were the record tags. It was a neat way of doing things. I'm trying to think. I mean,
I actually have come to appreciate some of the ways in which Cold Fusion does its functionality, like how it does looping through queries and how it does looping through variables and things like that. It actually does really interesting things, particularly the way it deals with structures. And the structures are basically their version of objects. And there are a lot of really interesting things you can do within the way it works. So it's, I mean, as an MVC language, it's really come a long way.
Mm-hmm. I had a pretty cool experience this week. So we're doing a lot of stuff in Amazon Web Services, right? The whole cloud-based computing type thing. And yeah, go for it, man. Billing is very interesting with Amazon, right? Talk about frictionless, reducing the friction to separate you from your money. Especially for a company using Amazon, you can get some big surprise bills really quickly with Amazon. So this week I spent a lot of my time. We might as well empty the bottle, right?
Yes.
I mean, who are we fooling if we don't do that?
Right.
So I did some time working on, you can get into the Amazon and get some cost exploring, but it doesn't really let you drill down to, nice, the resource level and all that stuff. But they do give you a detailed billing report, which is in a CSV file. What?
Nothing.
Well, it is, you know, this whole draft release thing, right?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure this bottle is not going to be making it to the shelves this way. But it has that same Adams label on the back, much like the Oats McGoats had a couple weeks ago. So I had this, they give you this CSV file, which is the most insane phone bill you've ever received. It's itemized. Our CSV file for so far this month, 310,000 lines. That's a lot of itemized billing, right? So I needed a way to make sense of this stuff, and I didn't want to write this whole reporting thing. So for our logs, I'm using a combination of three products. FluentD, which is kind of a log gathering program. Elasticsearch, which is, I guess you probably call it unstructured data. I'm not sure the quite definition for unstructured data, but it's kind of a Hadoop-y type database. Okay. And Kibana, which is the visualization for Elasticsearch. And so I wrote this pretty quick Python script that takes the CSV, throws it into Elasticsearch, and then all in the Kibana UI, I was able to write all the reports and get really good visualization into these 310,000 rows. I mean, it does some rudimentary pivot tables, which you need to parse this kind of data. I'm really psyched with the kind of visualization, because now every user who is using Amazon resources can monitor what they're costing the company. They can dig in and see which of their resources is doing what, costing what, probably at a 4-hour lag or so, or something like that, because I'm at the mercy of how often Amazon updates this source file that I'm using, which is more than once a day. I'm still not sure exactly how many times a day they do it. But yeah, I'm really psyched that, I mean, I'm like, got this super powerful reporting tool, and I didn't have to write any of the reports. I used the GUI to create some baseline reports, you know, and like I could even do this pivot stuff, like right in the GUI. All I had to do was write probably a 150 line Python script. And it's only 150 lines because I have a lot of error checking in it. To pull this CVS file or pull the zip file out of S3, which is their simple storage service, unzip it, parse it.
S3.
What?
Weren't you around in Nauticon when we did S3? Oh,
yeah. No.
Speed service. And
they should have trademarked the son of a bitch.
Yeah.
They could have sued Amazon. Because Amazon's a simple storage service, but everyone who deals with Amazon, you know, it's S3. And, I'm just very psyched. Just rolling it out, probably roll it out early next week. I've kind of given early preview to a couple people, including the VP of engineering, and he's pretty happy about the visibility he gets into costing now. But yeah, you could run up a several thousand dollar bill by accident at Amazon and not know it until it's too late. Now, I guess the first time you do that, there's kind of the whole, oopsie, can I get forgiveness for this bill? But, you know, so it's going to be very, like a company like ours, we're running stuff. Our product works against Amazon storage and will be running in Amazon's Elastic Compute Cloud. You know, it's the price of doing business. We have to test and develop our product in there, right? And Amazon, we're a partner, so we get a tiny credit, but it's not enough to cover a fraction of our development. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our Amazon bill is going to be non-trivial every month going forward. So.
Amazon is paying $1 billion for Twitch.
Twitch.
That's which people watching that? Games online.
Oh, that's it, right? I did see that.
Why aren't they paying several billion for something that would speed up data transfer?
Maybe someday soon. Amazon's all about, they're all about gaining new customers. They're not about improving customer experience, right? I mean, they're not going to acquire a company that doesn't gain them customers.
I guess that's true. What it would require is somebody trying to compete with Amazon. Like if Google were trying to get into this.
Well, Google just bought a company that does cloud encoding, like video media rendering, right? Mm-hmm. And people might ask if that competes with some of our market because we're pretty big in the media and entertainment business.
But you're about data.
Well,
not you don't. One of our recent rendering technology.
We
they use you.
We are an every render shop.
Yeah, yeah. They
every render shop that you have ever heard of, we are in it. We just put out a press release. I remember
it was very funny. Me and Damien were watching the ends of Guardians, you know, the credits of Guardians of the Galaxy and, uh-huh. and all the different digital, because you know, there's some that they just have it. Okay, you do the fire effects or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, we work with them. We work with them. We work with them. Well, we don't work with those guys. We work with them.
We just put out a press release talking about how Avere dominates the effects industry. Mm-hmm. And it's really almost not hyperbole. I mean, we're in... I mean, I'm being literal here, right? The old literal. We should just call it old literal. we're in a lot of effect shops. I mean, you name... We put another press release. I think the top 13 top grossing movies of last year all used effect shops that use us.
But again, like I said, that's not surprising because they all use 18 effect shops because they farm out.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Thank you for knocking me down there.
I'm just saying, these guys do the water great. These guys do the fire great. These guys do whatever, motion effects or something. These guys do the 3D. You are really involved in like 3D stuff, right? There are a couple of them.
It really has to do with the mechanics of the render is where we come into value. We don't do the rendering.
But I mean, like, but the 3D shops almost all.
Well, it's double the throughput, right?
Yeah,
it's two frames for it's instead of 24 frames a second, it's 48 frames a second. So
true, but it's not just that. It's also the fact that you have to populate a more complicated picture.
Where was I going though? Oh, so we're talking about like Google just bought a cloud encoder, right? I feel that they're competing with Amazon already has a cloud encoder, right? It's a service you can buy in your Amazon Web Services. I feel that the major effect studios, a big part of their intellectual property is their render system, right? I mean, Pixar has RenderMan, Weta has, I forget what it's called, but Weta has, you know, the proprietary thing. They're not using the Amazon render service. They're not going to use the Google render service. Those are going to be much smaller things. Those are going to be indie film producers. Those are going to be film students doing those things, right? Now they have a choice whether using Amazon or Google to get render as a service. Hopefully I'm right. Hopefully I'm not too off base, but you know, I don't see that as much of a worry for the
Short term, it's not a worry. Not medium term either, but long term, it could eventually be effective.
I can't put myself in a place where the innovation for rendering is going to come from Google and Amazon and not from Pixar and Weta.
Why not?
Because that's their lifeblood. Their goal is to be better than the next guy.
Google's goal is to be better than everyone. Google's goal is to take what everybody's doing and make it better. So he did with
Maps. But then Pixar and Weta are going to try to they'll be trying to outcompete Google.
They're going to try.
Okay. Yeah, you could be right. I don't think Google's market is to displace Pixar and Weta's and Walt Disney Animation Studios and Sony Imageworks. I don't think Google's trying to displace their industry-leading rendering engines.
Here's what I think Google is doing. Google is saying, we have tons of money. We're just like a Scrooge, like 18 Scrooge McDuck bins full of money, right? So let's pull out feelers everywhere we can and let's see what grows. That's what they've been doing in the past. Buzz, Wave, etc. That's what they're doing right now. Now, if this catches on, then you bet your ass it'll be bigger than
that. But the total addressable market for rendering is... It's almost
when,
not
when
a
good... Amazon jumped into web services, people are like, you're a shop that sells online stuff.
Yeah. I could be wrong. I mean, but it's media rendering. Maybe I'm being short-sighted, but I don't think the total addressable market for that is Google scale.
When Google puts up the quantum computers that they're making, and they use those for rendering... Well, actually, rendering would be a really useless way to use quantum computers because that's not... you can't solve very interesting rendering problems with quantum computing. It's just not the kind of problems it solves. Mm-hmm. So never mind.
I mean, I just don't see that as a Google scale problem, right? I think that...
How do you know what's going on in Google? Google's doing...
I'm just looking at the market, and I mean, the projects they've canceled, and you know what they run. You know, this is holy
armchair. Did you see Google's drone program?
No, I don't think so.
They've been testing a drone thing, a drone system in Australia.
Because, is it the balloons or something?
No,
because they did the balloons down there.
No, it's a drone system, like a lot like the Amazon thing that you saw, but. Actually functional instead of just, you know, fake.
Mm-hmm.
Still nothing there that, you know, can be used right away, but they're working on the technology too. Everyone's thinking about drones. And why not? I mean, I know that people are like, oh, privacy is bullshit. This is the privacy era is over. The fact of the matter is that your sky is a huge amount of real estate that's not being used,
mm-hmm.
and can be used for lots of things.
I mean, privacy is an issue, but drones can have some really profound effects on science, big data, just statistic collection, you know, that kind of thing. Like, and think about, again, well, not again, but, you know, Google used to have the mantra, do no evil, right? Imagine drones in a do no evil world. It's going to have a huge value. I mean, it's going to be billions of dollars of value.
If you think about all those Star Wars movies, they had all these drones running around all the time, and people mm-hmm. just don't care because they're used to it.
Right.
Once you're used to it, you don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, it's a little bit trickier, right? Because how would you like to have this gasoline-powered leaf blower noise up over your house, hovering there, watching what you're doing? Now, hopefully you never get targeted, right? I guess the goal there is to not become anyone's attention.
We've gotten used to planes flying over. That'd be something that would scare somebody 200 years ago.
Yeah.
Even the occasional sounds of helicopters and cars driving by, people fucking driving on their motorcycles and driving you nuts at 2 a.m. That doesn't happen here, but, you know, it certainly happens around the city.
You can hear it here.
Yeah. I mean, people are just like, oh, okay, I'm going to do my motorcycle thing at 2 a.m. Ha, 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 ha. So...
Yeah, the thing is, it's the surveillance platform that drones are, right? That's the thing that's so worrisome. For less than $300, you can get this drone surveillance platform, and you can, if you have someone you have a grudge against, you can surveil them nonstop. You know, there's really nothing they can do to stop it. They can't really shoot it down. They can't put up a fence. They'd have to put a roof over their whole yard.
Why couldn't they do something to stop it? Why don't you think that laws would be made to stop that sort of thing if it became a problem?
Okay.
I mean, and also, you know, if you're worried about...
Well, there is laws right now. You're not allowed to operate a drone. It's not stopping people.
It's certainly stopping...
Did you see the thing about the drone flying over PNC Park about a month ago?
Well, it's stopping... Any sort of surveillance that could be used for any legal purposes, for sure. I mean, you can't take that stuff to court or anything. And you also have to think about, well, you know, we've been and are being monitored by satellites over us. Yeah, it takes a couple million to send them up. And over only really governments and big corporations can send them. But believe me, they can. Mm-hmm. And they can monitor just as well as a drone. And you don't have to worry about fuel as nearly as much about fuel and stuff. So, you know, call it what you will. We live in a world that's being monitored constantly.
Here, there's a Twitter account at... funwith_drone. It's a guy who operates a drone and takes photos and posts them on Twitter. which, you know, the FCC has a real issue with people operating drones these days. The one that was flying over the baseball stadium here in Pittsburgh, the police were involved, the FCC was involved, they were trying to track down the guy who had flown the drone over the state baseball game. And actually, I think they postponed the baseball game, or they're like, stopped play.
It's a reasonable precaution. I mean, you don't know what the drone is going to do. You don't know if it's planning to dive bomb the field or something. I mean, if you don't know, then it's a reasonable precaution to make in a crowded situation.
Right.
I think that this is something that is going to have to go through some iterations. It's going to have to go through some court stuff to figure out what's legal and not. At the same time, I really don't think that it will take all that long. I think it'll be something along the lines of, you know, what we're seeing with gay marriage, which is that it's not this thing that's going to take 100 years. It's this thing that's kind of barreling through courts.
So, yeah, I mean, well, the FCC is pushing Congress to make, or FAA. I kept saying the FCC. Replace all the FCC comments I've made previously with FAA.
Just as you replace all the cherry with pomegranate?
Yes, okay. pomegranate molasses, yeah. Man, this beer is fucking awesome. Damn it, there's something I want to talk about. I was like, I'm going to write that down. I'm like, nah, I'll remember it. Anyway, back to the drones.
Back to drones!
I mean, I think drones offer a lot of promise with research.
And?
Just science and research in general, right?
Monitoring.
Animals, monitoring. There are actually...
Environment, monitoring.
There's
weather, monitoring.
Frackers. There's people doing that, and they're flying drones over fracking things and whatnot, right? They're trying to find violations and whatnot. Or they put VOC sensors on the drones and fly them over the frack sites to figure out, you know, how much outgassing that they're providing and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that again, it can't be used legally, but they can throw it on a web page and say, you know, this is what we found. They can make public announcements about it. It'll be used for reporting.
Oh, could you imagine how much a TV studio could save not having to put up the traffic helicopter?
But it will also be used for traffic monitoring. I mean, you could go to a website and see real time. Instead of having to have those cameras that are fixed, you could see a larger picture.
It would be a more context-relevant picture, right? Because the drone would move to where it's important to show the picture instead of putting cameras up everywhere. Yeah, I think there's a promise. I think you just, when the creepy guy down the street's able to afford a drone.
creepy guy down the street can already afford spy cameras. And
something about something hovering over your head watching you is more disconcerting than hidden cameras.
Why?
I'm just saying that. I didn't say it's worse. I said there's something that's more disconcerting.
I know. I'm asking you why.
It's a psychological thing. There's something up there following you. It's this eye following you instead of these cameras you don't know about.
I know, and I agree. Why is it there, that weird irrational
thing? You feel helpless because you can't reach it.
Mm. But don't you feel helpless if there's a camera that you can't see or a microphone that you can't see?
Well, if you find the camera, you can do something about it. It's about, I mean, sure, you can be paranoid about something that might or might not be there. There might be a camera hidden in this room. But you know it's there. You know it's watching you, and you're helpless about it. That's what's disconcerting.
I really wouldn't care. There's nothing I've done in this room that I...
Well, I'm talking about the drones, right? You know that it's there. You feel helpless because you can't do anything about it.
If you know that it's there, then the situation is different than if you aren't sure whether it's there or not, right? I mean...
You need cloaked drones, and then probably
there's one. Then you don't, then you
it's no different from today.
Yeah.
That's the key. Let's make cloaked drones.
So we need to figure out how to make cloaking devices. We actually have figured out how to make various types of cloaking devices, but there's a problem. Which is that if we cloak something in visual light, for example, then no visual light gets to it. So that doesn't really solve the problem of surveilling. I saw an article about a time cloak. Really interesting idea.
Okay.
So the concept is, and they produced it, but people on a forum were like, "What the heck is this about? I can't understand." And so I distilled it down for them, and they liked the explanation. So the idea is, okay, let's say you have a signal going from point A to point B through some sort of channel, right? Mm-hmm. And you know how fast the signal takes to go from A to B in that channel. So the idea behind a time cloak is, what if you had point A to B, and the channel, instead of going directly, it kinks out, goes somewhere else, comes back, and goes to B, but it takes the same amount of time. So you've changed the material, or you've changed the way that the information travels, so that it takes the same amount of time to get from A to B, mm-hmm. but it takes a different path.
Okay.
Essentially, you're cloaking something in time. You're sacrificing a space-like dimension mm-hmm. to take a time-like dimension, to cloak it in time. That's an interesting idea.
So let's do some Amazon Anonymous, shall we?
Sure.
We've had...
Wouldn't you like to make a beer like this?
Oh my God. I think Boston Beer has been at it a few years to figure out how to make something
yeah.
like this. 19 items are on the list this week. I'm going to go with the Queen Size Deluxe Murphy Bed Kit Vertical. What is this? This is... Oh, a Murphy bed. Those are the flip-up beds, like using like a small New York City thing. So
those
it's
are
a,
cool.
It's a kit to turn, I guess, a normal box spring into a Murphy bed. It's $369. It has 5 out of 5 stars, 10 customer reviews. And they show a picture here of the pieces, and it's a bunch of metal brackets and whatnot.
So a good way to get a bed out of your way, you know, if you have a small space.
Ooh.
And it turns into like an armoire. It
looks like an armoire when it's flipped up.
It's pretty cool.
Murphy beds, huh? Okay, so I like reading reviews, so I'm going to...
Can I read the review?
You can read the review.
Okay. What? Tell me which review you want me to read.
Well, these are all very... Oh, here's a nice long one.
Okay. This... Supper easy.
It is supper easy.
The instructions were great. The hardware is awesome and made well. My queen bed... In all with a cheap mattress cost about $1,000, but to buy something similar would have cost 2 to 3 times that. If you love an excuse to tinker in your workspace, buy this set. You might even learn something from the instructions. What? Oh, screwdrivers, that's how they work. If you are one a time crunch and need it in a week or two, move on. It takes time, especially when it comes to finishing. Rather than struggle with a sheet of plywood and a table saw, I took the instructions to my local millworks. Jesus Christ. They cut the pieces and saved me several days of work. Home Depot. It's Home Depot, but they didn't put a D in capital D. Home Depot and Lowe's probably can't do the cuts. Their machines are not built for precision, and you want that. I did mine at Dixie Line in South California. It cost me $30 to have all the pieces cut out. Well worth it. Supper easy.
Supper easy. Thanks, Jonna Overson.
All right, let me take a look for mine.
All right. Greg is scrolling through the list. He is perusing. He is not picking the Energizer watch batteries. He's moved on. Those Samsung SSDs are from work, so you don't need to use those.
Okay, this makes me curious. We have phones that are perfectly capable of doing this. But somebody purchased a Garmin eTrex 20 worldwide handheld GPS navigator.
Now, it gets 3.5 stars. You know, I guess maybe it's more precise?
It's probably not more precise. I find that my phone is more accurate when I'm geocaching than my GPS receiver. However, if you're using your GPS receiver, you're not burning your phone batteries.
Right, that's true. Powered by 2 AA batteries, so you can just put batteries in and out all the time. Yeah. Waterproof. Mm-hmm. IPX standards.
It's definitely more durable than a phone.
Support for paperless geocaching, whatever that means, and Garmin spine mounting accessories. You can mount on your spine. That'd be cool.
I think a spine's kind of a mount point type thing.
It would be much cooler if you can mount it onto your spine. Mm-hmm. And only a 2.2-inch color display. I don't know. I mean, hey, thanks for buying it.
Yeah, I use my... The phone is so convenient for geocaching because you have the data link connection. Mm-hmm. So if you have a premium membership for geocaching and you buy the app, so you're paying a monthly or a quarterly subscription. And
it's really super easy.
And $10 for the app. It is super easy because it loads it all right there. Where using your computer and downloading a data file and converting it to your GPS's data format and uploading it to your GPS... That's when geocaching actually took some commitment, and it was hard, and what I used to do back before I had kids. I briefly looked at what today's GPS receivers are capable of and whether any of them are worthwhile, but really the lack of data connectivity, and because my phone's GPS is often accurate within 16 feet, that's better than my Magellan normally is. So,
now the phones though, they use a hybrid version of GPS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They uses not as many satellites, right? Or it uses some sort of satellite combined with Wi-Fi information.
Well, they also use tower information,
right?
So there's assisted. They use tower information. If you have Wi-Fi on, they'll use Wi-Fi information.
And it says if you turn Wi-Fi off, it does tell you that your location services will be not as.
But even precise. When I'm not near Wi-Fi,
it's still more precise.
Yeah, the assisted tower stuff, I think, helps dial it in. And yeah, I'm often plus minus 16 feet.
So the question would be, though, if you were in the wilderness far away from towers, it may really not work very well at all.
It's still... when I was up on Kelly's Island, I was in a place with not much cell reception. And I was still having really good accuracy.
Really? Does it actually have... Satellite transceivers inside?
Yeah.
Okay.
It does have a GPS chip in it, yeah.
You need at least 4. You need at least 4 GPS.
Right. I mean, the phone works good. The biggest reason to get the standalone device is so you don't burn your phone battery when you're out geocaching, right? That's a problem. Actually, I just got... We had a vendor come in. To work, not for me, but I got the gift. It's a phone charger. It's 2600 milliamp hours. It'll charge an iPhone about 1.5 times. It's a little plastic thing that has a USB port on it, and it's one of those portable charger things. And,
it's got a mini USB on one side and a full USB.
The mini USB is for charging it, and the full USB is for charging your device from it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty psyched. It's about the size.
So it's bigger like two sticks of gum.
It's 2 packs of gum. Yeah, it's bigger than a roll of Lifesavers, but not much bigger. But yeah, I mean, I get 2600 mAh out of it. Actually, this is better than that Minty Boost thing that I built, right? The nice thing about the Minty Boost is it uses AA batteries, right? So you can just go to the convenience store and get more juice, where this you have to plug it in somewhere and get more juice. I think in tandem, they're both very good tools to have when you need more juice. But yeah, I mean, for when I'm using my phone for geocaching, this is a good thing.
You should explain what the Minty Boost is. It was an Altoids charger.
It's a kit that you can buy from SparkFun or other electronic stores. And yeah, it's called Minty Boost because it's designed to fit inside the smaller Altoids tin. Not the traditional one, but the smaller one that's more like a pack of gum. Mm-hmm. And it's just big enough for two AA batteries, the circuitry, and out the side sticks a USB port. And you put two fresh batteries in it, and it'll give my iPhone 4S about 3/4 of a charge before they're dead.
Does it get pretty hot?
It does get hot.
Yeah.
It does. You can't use rechargeable batteries in it because you need the rapid. This is kind of ironic because, you know, nickel metal hydra, or remember the lithium batteries are supposed to be good for flashes for rapid discharge. The directions for the Minty Boost say to not use lithium, not to use nickel metal hydrides, but to use alkaline. And, you know, because it does a quick discharge, the batteries get hot, the circuitry gets hot. And, but, you know, when you're in a pinch and you need to charge your USB device off of AA batteries, mm-hmm. I mean, that's one reason I don't actually have my little pocket camera over there. It's broken now. But, you know, last time I bought a point-and-shoot camera, I went out of my way to find one that takes AA's. I mostly would use rechargeables in it. But the big advantage about one that uses AA's is when you're out in the field and you need more batteries, you can go buy them. Mm-hmm. Where if your lithium battery dies, you have to charge it. Or if you're lucky, you can find a place that sells you a lithium battery, but right. They're not cheap, so... I'm not sure if I'll ever be in the market for another point-and-shoot camera. I mean, our phones still aren't as good as shooting with flash, right? They're still not as good shooting inside at night.
Yes, but how often is that? I mean, if you were a professional photographer, then yeah, you don't use your phone for a camera.
If you're a photo buff,
then you don't use your phone for a camera.
But I mean, there's people that, like for me, my phone camera is great. Outside in the sun. It's not good enough inside at night. And over the last several years, there's been times where it's not been satisfactory. And there's been times where I've needed to use my point and shoot with a real flash on it, right? It's broken now. I don't have immediate plans on buying a new one. But I'm also undersatisfied with what my phone can do. But only in certain situations. Mm-hmm. It would sure be nice if they could... Maybe that... I don't know. There's that Microsoft phone that has the huge megapixel zoom and the flash and stuff. Maybe
technology is just going to keep getting better.
Yeah. It's a matter of time, yeah. But it's one of those things that it should have been... Point-and-shoot cameras should have been obsoleted by now.
They are.
They should have been fully obsoleted by now. I'm not even talking about prosumers. I'm just talking about people that care enough to be able to take a decent photo in the dark.
I mean, record players should have been obsolete by now, but there are people who love them.
Yeah. You know? I'm not saying SLR should be obsolete. I'm saying point-and-shoot cameras should be obsoleted by smartphones.
I think that they pretty much are.
Until you get inside. In the evening.
I don't find it to be... Well, I don't take many shots anyway, but I don't find it to be a problem.
If you're... Okay. I understand what you're saying, but, you know, I would like to have output appropriate for printing 4x6s, 5x7s.
Why?
Because there's... Sometimes you need to decorate your walls. Don't laugh. It's a reasonable reason.
No, it is. It is. You're right. It's a reasonable reason. I mean, it's not something I do, but it's definitely reasonable. But I don't see why you couldn't do that with an iPhone picture, particularly if you did just a bit of digital enhancement on it, and it offers plenty. So,
if I was at I don't know, wedding reception, right? When the dance party's going on, right? You take pictures with your iPhone, take pictures with a cheapy...
Have you done HDR pictures?
Take pictures with a cheapy point and shoot. Yeah, I've taken HDR pictures. You know, the iPhone 5 or 5S doesn't compare to what you can get for... I don't know what price point right now. But yeah, I would expect, you know, a $160 camera can blow an iPhone 5S in low light conditions out of the water. And if you're just tweeting the picture, no big deal, right? If you're just putting it on Facebook. But if you want a decent photograph that you can make a picture from.
I think that the amount of people who want decent photographs is considerably smaller than the amount of people who just want to take pictures to, you know, put on their Facebook timeline or put on
Twitter. I won't argue against that.
And so I think that for...
Heather yells at me when I delete the blurry pictures out of the photo stream, like that I'm putting up on, you know, because we use Flickr as our photo archive. And before I put stuff up, I kind of clean it up. And she'll get mad at me for deleting this piece of shit photo that, sure, you can tell what it is, but it doesn't show anything valuable, mm-hmm. you know? I almost, like, when I took a picture, when I tweeted the picture of the grandmother funk, the back picture was a little bit blurry. I'm like, I felt, like, shitty for posting that one. Like,
I always take, you know, because you can just hold down the picture button and I always take, like, three or four. I have shaky hands. And so, usually one of those will come out nice.
Heather's problem is she'll take three or four of eight of every shot she wants to take mm-hmm. times 1,000. So I have 8,000 pictures I need to go through. At that point, you're kind of just like picking ones here and there that you...
I mean, all these, you know, pictures I made of the... Mm-hmm. I made a whole bunch of pictures of them, and I definitely winnowed them down. Let's see if I have some interesting ones that I have here besides the... I was showing Jeff the pictures that we made of the...
The brewing session.
The brewing session that we had. I had a picture of Allison here. Yeah, here's Allison with Dusty.
And a bunch of carpet. Okay.
Dusty was, you know, was playing around. It was fun. You've seen Reese, right? The pictures of Reese.
Mm-hmm.
She's real cute.
Yeah.
And, oh, hey.
Hey, it's the fake virus. So what do you think about this Ebola shit?
What do I think about it?
What do you think the outcome will be? Do you think it'll get quelled? Do you think it's going to explode? What the what? Should I recognize her?
You should, yeah.
Da, 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 da. Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, so what do you think's...
Do you recognize that guy?
I don't know.
It's Nick.
Okay. Nice. I don't know. Are they going to get it under control before it spreads much more? Is it going to have an outbreak? I mean, like...
I mean, it already is an outbreak.
Well, I mean, but is it going to be like a pandemic?
It already is a pandemic.
Well, I think... I haven't heard pandemic. I've heard epidemic, but I haven't heard pandemic
yet. Well, I mean, it's... No, Ebola doesn't have the power to be a pandemic. Mostly because of... A, this is actually What gives it some more strength is that... It's not as deadly. It only seems to be killing by 50% versus 90% for other strains of Ebola that we've seen. A more deadly strain kills its people so quickly that it kind of runs its steam
mm-hmm.
real quick. This one seems to...
Only
50%. And also keep in mind that this is 50% in an area where they do not have a lot of medical technology. They, you know, they don't have the kind of support and care that we would get. If it were to happen in a Western area, it would be considerably less of a problem because the whole reason how it spreads is through bodily fluids and things like that. And if you
it doesn't spread through the air?
No.
Okay.
It's not airborne. It can't. It doesn't have the capability to mutate into an airborne virus. It just doesn't have the the stuff. It doesn't have the proteins. It's a purely physical thing. So, I mean, the way that they handle the dead, the way that they treat, you know, people in those areas is very backwards compared to what we would now. It's not...
I heard that the dead bodies are very infectious, just from fluids and whatnot.
Absolutely. Blood, saliva, any discharge really is, you know, has this stuff in it. So it's a bad one if you come in contact with it, but coming in contact with it is, if even moderate precautions are taken, it's pretty difficult.
I see. I heard a story about where they're talking about how there were a bunch of reports over the last years where people were getting ill, but not fatally ill, and they thought it was a fever that was common in that part of the world, not dengue, but you know, something like that, and they tested negative for the fever they were checking for. And it showed that there were almost, I didn't really gather. They kind of talked about a couple different things in the story I didn't fully understand. But they may have been, it may have been a dormant or mostly dormant Ebola. I don't know about the science of this, but like, I don't know if saying they're carriers was the right thing, but they had... They were likely infected with the Ebola virus, the Ebola Zaire, but not expressing the full-on attack, you know, the full-on symptoms of Ebola infection. And they were talking about how this is much more, I don't know, it's kind of like a different mode of operation for the virus and how it might be much more widespread in those areas than they previously thought, something like that. I'm trying to think what they said. One more thing they said about was,
I mean, there's an American hemorrhagic fever. I'm trying to remember what it's called, but, there are other hemorrhagic fevers besides
Ebola. You're talking about, last week you mentioned the one the mice give you out west.
And yeah.
Shit. At the end, Cosmic Mother Funk, make me forget.
Hantavirus,
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, these things are out there. Look, it's a shitty world. It's a world full of things that are feeding on you as much as you're feeding on them.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Well, I mean, you live your life. If you're constantly in concern of this kind of thing, of things that are really pretty much outside of your... Either they're outside of your control or they're very much in your control. That's what Ebola is.
I saw a video... Change the subject. I think we're about done with Ebola. But before I forget, I saw an interesting video. I'm not sure where I caught it. One of those public... probably like a BuzzFeed type site or something. But it was these guys...
Clickhole. Have you been visiting Clickhole?
I have not
been. I keep telling you about
it. You sent me a Clickhole link, but I haven't been visiting it.
Do you know what Clickhole is?
I don't know.
So Clickhole is the Onion's parody of BuzzFeed.
Okay.
And they do BuzzFeed-like articles, but they're absolutely ridiculous. Let's go to a Clickhole link here.
Okay, you look up the Clickhole link. I'll talk about what I want to talk about. There was these dudes who are the skyscraper antenna repairman type guys. You know, like how every super high skyscraper has the antennas on top of it. And these guys hooked up a GoPro on their helmets, and they were working on the second tallest building in Chicago, on top of, you know, another like 700-foot antenna on top of it, and this dude is standing on, at the top of the post that he's on, there's this little plate, probably about 18 inches in circle, right? he's standing on this thing. There's nothing higher than him. He's tied into it, to the, and then he's using a cutting torch to cut part of the plate that he's standing on away. And just watching this video, this video of the heights and whatnot. I mean, you're sitting at your desk watching this on your computer, and the human evolution of fear of heights is so ingrained. You're watching this thing, you're almost getting queasy watching this guy work up there.
I have seen a one where a guy is scaling a big radio tower, and it's pretty insane. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's what I was bringing up, is more of the psychological of the viewer who's safe at home on the ground gets like this queasy feel, like, holy shit, I can't believe there's someone up there doing this. And then it just adds to the fact that he's standing on the highest part. There's nothing higher for him to hold on to, right? And this thing's probably moving. And then he's not just standing on it. He's cutting part of it away with a cutting torch. Fucking insane.
Okay, so here's Clickhole. I'm just going to read you a couple article titles. They're full articles, you know, here, but okay. Well, the top one here is 5 Tips to Fuck Good.
Oh, that was the one where you sent me the... Was that Clickhole where you sent me the video about... Oh, that was so funny. What was that? It was about how...
You'll be amazed at how this person changes...
It was almost like a eHarmony dating video, but they were talking.
Oh, that was the Onion where it was, you know, who's fucking now? Yeah,
that one. That was really good.
Okay,
why don't you pull? I think you should cue that up. Who's fucking?
This was a great article. This was an article so great that it actually trended on social media because people thought it was, you know, real. 5 tragedies weirdly predicted by Adam Sandler. So, number one, the Waco siege. Okay. In the wake of the 1993 tragedy, which involved Branch Davidian leader David Koresh and 75 other people perishing during an FBI raid in the cult's compound, few knew that a young Adam Sandler had predicted the incident in his stand-up act. Tapes now reveal Sandler would often spend several minutes on stage repeatedly uttering the phrase, "Something's coming to Waco. Something dark." There's another one here. The 2010 Haitian earthquake. The UN estimates that 222,570 people were killed and 300,572 injured during this tragedy, which are only slightly off from Sandler's funny people estimates, 220,000 deaths and 400,000 injuries. And finally, Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. The case of the missing Malaysian passenger flight on March 8, 2014 was almost too perfectly echoed the line from a 1993 Saturday Night Live Opera Man sketch. A missing planer, it's from Malaysia. Make me insaner. This will all make sense in due time.
People thought this was real. People will tweet anything.
I know. That's what's brilliant about this site is it nails the BuzzFeed shit.
Here, completely. I just made you a diamond.
Oh, thank you.
A cork diamond. Pull up that hoop.
There's a video here of guy misses 33 consecutive half court shots.
I can do that.
Oh man. Six pictures of Scarlett Johansson that will make you say, "This is a picture of a boat."
We need to have a guest. I know you wanted to bring Nick last week, but we need to have a guest on so we can play some more Cards Against Humanity.
I like having Nick on because he's kind of where we were, like, you know, a year or two into it. So it's interesting to, because we forget the kind of things that some, you know, that you go through at that point.
Right.
So Nick has that, he's interested in beer, he loves it, but he doesn't have quite the experience.
Right.
And so it's nice to have that, you know, the quote-unquote non-jaded guy, the guy who is, you know, really, you know, blown away by the stuff that he's tasting.
Right.
23 insanely mind-blowing facts about the class of 2018. So, they're, number three, their parents weren't even born until 1997.
Mind-blowing.
Number five, none of them have vestigial tails. Number 10, they're 100% bisexual, so get used to it.
Did I ever tell you how I was curious, thought maybe that I may have had a vestigial tail? No? Yes?
Maybe. Number 21, all of them were born on 9/11. All right, so you want
to
hear...
I wanted you to play up the...
Okay, vestigial tail. Sure, go ahead. I'll search for the video.
You know, I first learned about a vestigial tail, and this is probably normal by most people. And then I heard about, you know, how if a baby's born with a vestigial tail, that the doctor will pretty much just remove it, right? Like, as a matter of course type thing.
Right.
And then, you know, as a younger person exploring my body, the very top of my butt crack, there's kind of a little indentation. It's probably normal, but I'm like...
Yeah, that's your Cossacks.
Is that the Cossacks? Okay. Yeah. But that indentation, like, I wonder if that's an indentation because some doctor snipped off my tail.
You have a tailbone.
Okay.
Everybody does.
Well, I haven't felt top of many people's butt cracks, so I don't know.
Try your wife.
I probably should. I'm trying to think if I have ever... No, I don't think I've ever checked Heather's there, so...
We met about 2 months ago at my friend Marsha's 31st birthday dinner, and I immediately noticed Josh.
Yeah, I can be like a little eHarmony shy video sometimes. Yeah.
It gets crazy.
I said to myself, you better go up and introduce yourself, because if you don't, you're going to regret it for the rest of your life. And we started talking, and, well, here we are. Now we're fucking.
Gets better. Gets a lot better.
My parents were thrilled when I told them I was finally fucking Josh. He had been eating my pussy for so long, I began to wonder if he was ever going to actually take out his dick and stuff my hole.
Deborah's not my typical fuck, and my friends were a little bit skeptical, but they're coming around. They're starting to see that, you know, this is the woman that I want to empty my balls in for the rest of my life.
I actually still remember exactly where we were when we first fucked.
It was right over there.
Josh was behind
camera pans over to the
face was pressed against the glass.
There's a little coffee table type thing.
Tremendous pounding, you know, just really deep in there, and that's when I realized at that moment that fuck like this comes around only once, so I better not blow it. Do you remember what you said to me that night?
Of course. Fill me with your cock. Fuck my mouth, daddy. God damn it. Go deeper. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck.
She has a very sincere look on her face.
Come on my back. I spent so much time looking for a woman that I could plow so hard that she'd walk funny for 2 days straight, and I'm just really glad that I never gave up.
No one should. I mean, the fucking you're waiting for is out there. For me.
That's one of the funniest things I've seen in a long, long time.
Well, I mean, the Onion gets it. I mean, they understand, they're so good at sort of picking out what is the, what are all these things sort of really about? And then take that and you know, I talked about game before, right? You know, the comedy concept of game, find the game, and then what's the word I'm looking for? Because I haven't read the book in a while, but it's you keep heightening the game,
right?
And what they're about is they heighten until they find out where they get the height, and that's when they film. That's when they write the thing or film the sketch. Is they get to the heightened point. The Onion has been so good at just picking out that, okay, what's the unsaid thing that's right, really here? Right. And let's take that and then super exaggerate
it. Stuff me with your cock.
And then, and the real trick with The Onion and Clickhole and all these other sites is that not only do they do that, but then they're very sincere about it. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't let on that they're, that it's a joke. It doesn't, they don't present it as a joke. They present it as absolutely serious while it being an absolute joke. And it works.
That's so good. I love that video. Anything else before we wrap it?
Let's see. Here's, okay, article. Six types of students in every college class. This is a classic BuzzFeed type article. Number one, the white one. Yep. Seems like there's one of these in every class. Usually this person in class with pale skin and black, brown, red, or blonde hair. As soon as you encounter the white one, you know right away. Number two, the black one. This is the person you recognize who's always black. You'll recognize him instantly from his skin color, black. At first, you might accidentally confuse him for the white one, but eventually you'll realize that his skin is darker and put two and two together. Number three, the Asian one. Whether you're out of the quad or packed into a lecture hall, you'll always be able to spot the Asian one. He'll typically be someone who has a background that somehow connects back to Asia, where lots of other Asian ones live. Number four, the other kind of Asian one. This guy, this one looks similar to Asian one, but you don't want to confuse it too. Usually this person is also from Asia, but somehow different. Number five, the Latino one. If the person's taking roll call and you hear a name like Garcia, Rodriguez, or Lopez, chances are you've totally got the Latino one in your mind, in your midst. You'll probably notice that this person is a little darker than the white one and a little lighter than the black one, but not always. That's the Latino one for you. And number six, the Indian one. At virtually every college, you're bound to run into this guy. This is the guy who's probably got family members from India. If everyone in the classroom represents a different CNN anchor, this guy's definitely the Fareed Zakir of the bunch, though it's hard to really pinpoint exactly why.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, oh, Clickhole is brilliant. Do you want to hear the five tips to fuck good?
Sure. Right. I need some tips.
Okay, here's how to fuck good. Fuck loud. When the fucking is happening with you, it must be loud. While you are fucking your sexual lover, scream loud and smash many porcelain dolls. This one assured the fucking is never forgotten. In 100 years, you can say to your sexual lover, remember the fucking? And your sexual lover will say to you, yes, it was loud when it happened. Fuck so good that you win an award. One of the top ways to fuck great is to fuck so good that you win a prize or trophy for how good it is. If someone asks if you fuck good, you can say, well, I want a prize for good fucking, so you tell me, idiot.
Okay.
Light a ring of sexual fuck torches.
A ring of what?
Sexual fuck torches.
Oh, of course. I do that every
time. Let a ring of sexual fuck torches around your mattress to encircle your fuck chamber with a sensual flame while you fuck like a master. Fuck torches are not expensive and they make you fuck good. So buy so many of them. So just buy so many of them. Then while you are fucking, your sexual lover might say, I like your fuck torches. And you can say, thank you, they were not expensive.
I need fuck torches.
Sweat wine. What is the most sexual fuck juice? That is correct. It is wine, the juice of love. Thus, if you want to fuck good, you must sweat wine out of your pores. You and your sexual lover can lick the wine off you, and it will be delicious, and you'll both become sexual and mad. You can sweat out good wine or garbage wine. Who cares? Finally, be damp. What is damp? Damp is the most sexual wetness. This is why when you fuck your sexual lover, you must be damp. Before you fuck, mist yourself in steam. This will make you not too wet and not too dry. Damp. Then when you and your sexual lover are inside each other, you can enjoy the sexual dampness and you can go insane with lust. No questions asked.
You can be too wet?
Yeah. You want to just be damp. The fuck so good that you win an award.
Where's the award accreditation process? That's I need to figure out how to enter my fuckings into award categories.
People said I was crazy to abandon my family to search for buried treasure, but 30 years later, I'm closer than ever to finding it.
I just went back to some of this Range Creek Small Batch after drinking best beer ever. Ooh, not best beer ever. Oh, it's rough. It's difficult. Let's just say it's difficult.
Yeah,
I will not be finishing that. That's not good.
No. You just kind of ruined the whole
afterglow.
Yeah.
Oh, I am regretting that sip.
Six sex toys that look exactly like penises. All right. Oh, that's good stuff.
Clickhole.com.
Clickhole.com.
Click your hole. All right. I think that's about it.
I think so.
Thanks, everyone.